This is URN Sport.
University Radio Nottingham, that's a good station as well. URN, let them do a go well to finish, please.
Can you stop editing the go well, please, at the end of their show?
Cheers.
Go well. Keep it URN.
Keep it URN.
URN.
This is URN.
Hello and welcome to the only cricket podcast that predicted it to be a 2-2 finish, but the only podcast that predicted Stuart Broad's retirement. The world media was absolutely stunned, but Monty Panesar on our last podcast called it. So we'll go straight to Monty. Monty, how are you? And congratulations on that huge call. How did you feel about it?
Well, I probably shouldn't take too much credit for it. I think Stuart Broad should be taking the credit for his magical spells and continually doing so well against Australia. So, you know, sometimes I suppose you look at people's characters and you make your own judgment by being in the dressing room, and you kind of think that, you know, Stuart Broad, he would want the big farewell. He would want, you know, go at his own terms. Very often sports people don't get that opportunity. And for him to do that, it puts him in a very special place. So, to get that prediction absolutely spot on, I must say the team did well. You know, our podcast team, we together did well.
Oh, Monty, for you to say us as a team, going back to 2009 when I was just getting into cricket, and to be where we are now just makes my summer. As ever, I'm joined by Toby Reynolds, the Jimmy Anderson to my Stuart Broad, or whatever way you want to play around with it. One of the best co-partners there could be.
Is that you announcing your retirement there, Dom?
Oh, yes. I'm done from the world of podcasts, my international podcast career. Toby, how are you? 2 days at the Ashes. How was it?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, first day was decent. Day 5 was definitely better, though. I was very, very nervous and fairly pessimistic until sort of 4 o'clock, which was... actually got very sunny in the end, and I was a bit scared then that the Aussies might be able to chase it down with not too much trouble, but some brilliant spells from Wokesy and Stuart Broad at the end sealed the deal and got the sort of moral victory for England.
The moral victory. I love the positivity. And we're also joined by Jack Napton from the Pre-Ocean Show, URN's biggest After Dark show. Jack, it's an absolute pleasure to be on here. And you're sort of a reconvert back to cricket. And we wanted to have you on as a sort of marker of how far cricket's come in the past few months. Jack, how have you enjoyed the series?
It's been brilliant. I didn't think I was going to... I mean, obviously, you and Toby and the whole Sticky Wickets team have been whittering on about it since January. But I didn't think it would engross me as much as it had. And I literally remember... Well, I've moved house in that time. But when I was back in Nottingham, I just remember it was one afternoon and I just didn't have a lot going on. And I thought... And I'd seen your message about the Ashes. And I thought, oh, yeah, Dom said about the Ashes, so I'll put it on. And I've just literally from... a few balls in, because I think I started watching like an over late on the first day of the first test, and a few balls in and I was immediately hooked, and it just reminded me of how much enjoyment I used to get out of cricket. And the series at no point besides the test that took place in the city which I now call home, was it didn't disappoint at all. So yeah,
didn't disappoint at all. Same goes for Stuart Broad's retirement. Monty, you called it. But what is Stuart Broad like as a person? Obviously, I've met him 3 times and both got lovely pictures with him, and he's just been an absolute gent every time. Obviously, not got to know him in the way you have, obviously, as teammates. So what's he like in the dressing room?
Yeah, look, he's very sort of meticulous with his planning, and he likes to do a lot of research for the batters. He always continuously look on the laptop, how to get the batsman out in different ways, and also always challenging his skill set. You know, he's always questioning, like, how do I get myself better? He kind of, like, has a bit of fun as well, you know, by just, you know, about banter about games and stuff like that, you know, Championship Manager and some of the other sort of stuff that helps him to switch off. But in terms of cricket, you know, he would want to have intelligent cricket chats. You know, he would want to have thought-provoking chats. He wouldn't just want to, you know, you just talk, you know, sort of, you know, small talk rubbish about cricket. That's not his kind of cup of tea, you know. So you would probably want to challenge him and say, oh, look, what if the ball wasn't swinging? How would you look to get David Warner out? And then he'll think, oh, maybe I'll try and, you know, push it a bit wider. Or, you know, often he says to me, look, Monty, if you're at mid-on and the ball is being left a lot, it means I'm bowling badly. And make sure you count, okay? So my next 2 overs, how many balls do I leave? I don't want it to be over 40%. Right. So I always think, OK, 12 balls, 40% of that is probably four balls. I think I've got it right. Four or five balls. I'm not too sure, right? So he would say to me, he goes, if they've left five balls in the next few overs, I'm bowling badly. But if they've only left two or three, then it means I'm bowling well. And that was his barometer, really. You know, he would want the batsman to play, but just enough, you know, just enough to get the outside edge. And if he knew if it was like we said, 30, 40%, and if it's too far out, then he knew that he wasn't bowling that well.
So interesting. Obviously, Monty, you played with him in Ashes tests and went to Bavaria with him for that horrible pre-Ashes 2010-11 trip, which is sort of the stuff of legend. His character and his warrior mentality is something that will always be remembered by England fans. What do you think his lasting legacy will be for England fans, Monty?
I think how he made the fans feel, really. You know, I think the fans absolutely adore him. They love him. But the excitement that he brought, he's able to turn a game. And that's what you look upon, you know, as a nation now, when we have a massive energy crisis, or, you know, some people are not able to pay their bills, or, you know, finding other ways of, you know, forms of income or whatever it is. You know, you need that hope. Who do I look upon? You know, I look upon Stuart Broad. He's the one who's given us hope. He's given us to say that, guys, have that fighting spirit in your life and have the excitement in your life. Go out and achieve your goals by seeing his performances. So it kind of motivates you as well.
Totally agree. And speaking very personally here, he was someone who really brought me into cricket, and I just loved watching him bowl. I always loved his mentality and the flicking of the bails, which has sort of become a little bit of synonymous with his retirement, Toby. It's just superb. It's everything he brought to the game. You were there on that final day. What was it like in the crowd? And do you think that outpouring of emotion, I don't really know what to ask, but what are your thoughts on Stuart Broad right now?
Well, he's a great player, wasn't he? I think first and foremost, you have to say that. I mean, yesterday, for a good while, me and some of the guys I sat with, we all sort of thought, surely he's not going to go wicketless. Like, there was a big chance until sort of the final couple wickets. There was a big chance. We were all thinking he's sort of made a big fuss of all his retirement. And he said he sort of left himself basically a day. He hit six of his last ball batting, took a wicket of his last ball bowling. We were scared that he wouldn't be able to get that, but it was good he did in the end. And you definitely noticed sort of once after the rain finished, the crowd definitely got behind England a lot more. And I think knowing that it was a much shortened time, they had 40, 45 overs to try and get all seven Australian wickets with what was still probably a chaseable score if the Aussies had managed to sort of see through sort of the spell, which really took them apart, which by Moeen and Wokes. But I think once the crowd got going and the wickets started falling, it just became inevitable that he was sort of going to get on a bit of a roll, and he did.
Stuart Broad and the word roll, or the phrase knees pumping, just seem to go together in Ashes cricket. You think of 2009, 2010-11, 2013 and 2015, and spells this summer. He's just an Ashes warrior. And this has been such an exciting Ashes, Jack. What has enticed you the most about this Ashes, and what has sort of brought you back into watching Test cricket?
Well, like I said, it was... And you know, regular listeners of Sticky Wicket will know the 100 divides opinions amongst the pundits in here. But it was the 100 originally, but then for Test cricket, this series, I think it was a bit of a balance of seeing players that I recognise. So obviously, you know, I've still paid attention when it's been like the World Cups and stuff, and I've seen Stokes do some magic. And then I remember watching highlights from the Headingley Test the other year when Stokes was magnificent. And then obviously Broad, Anderson, and players like that, and you know, Bairstow to an extent as well. It was kind of a mixture of players that I'd never watched before, and only heard like people like you guys talk about, and then combined with the players that were still around from when I was last paying a lot of attention to Test cricket and watching it a lot. And weirdly enough, Stuart Broad is the first player who ever sort of made cricket look amazing to me, quite similar to you by the sounds of it, Don. But the first Test match I ever went to was at Trent Bridge, which at the time I did not know was like Stuart Broad's home ground, if you will. And I remember him obviously being brilliant with the ball. I can't remember who the Test was against, and I think it was like one of the middle days, and we only went for a day, which, you know, Toby, you've done it right going to the first and last day. Obviously, middle days in Tests aren't always the most exciting, depending on weather and everything, other circumstances. But it was Stuart Broad who actually came in with the bat and set things on fire. We'd seen a pretty slow day. I remember being told by my dad when I think Owen Morgan was playing, and he particularly liked Owen Morgan and was like, oh, we're about to see some good shots now. And I don't think Owen Morgan sort of did a lot before getting out, and it was underwhelming. And then it was Stuart Broad that came in and sort of set it alight. So I think it was the the combination of new players that I can discover, but enough players that I recognised would, you know, bring some drama and theatrics, and as well as, you know, sensational cricket, that meant that I was perfectly on board as soon as that I saw that first ball to sit there and go, yeah, this is my summer. I'm excited by this.
And the finishes to every test bar, of course, Old Trafford have been superb. So usually with 3 wickets or 50 runs as a margin of victory, that happens once every 3 games, according to Andy Zaltzman. We had it 4 times in 5 test matches. Monty, is this better than 2005? Drama and quality?
Well, I think if Edgbaston they were a bit more less risky and a bit more ruthless, then I think it probably would have been better than 2005. I believe that England would have won this either 3-2 or 4-1, depending on the Manchester result, if the rain wasn't there. So I think they were just slightly took ambitious risks, which now probably looking back quietly when Ben Stokes, obviously in the media, will say no, because he has to keep up to the persona that he is, Mr. Basball. But I think when he'll sit down and reflect, he'll probably think, actually, yeah, I probably did get it wrong. And that was a reflection on the Old Trafford test, where they had a lead over 100 would have been enough. You know, they should have backed themselves, but they kind of felt that, you know, we've done it once, we can't do it again. And they obviously, you know, scored far too many runs. And then we saw, you know, Johnny Bairstow produce one of his best innings there, which was great, but it wasn't necessary, you know. So I believe they batted far too long. You know, I think the way they took the risk at Old Trafford is what they should have done at Edgbaston. And what they did at Edgbaston should have been at Old Trafford. So they got the sort of decision-making slightly confused there. But overall, I think, you know, they will learn a lot now. They will learn a lot about how to approach maybe first test of a series, maybe slightly not be so risky. And then they can get a bit more ambitious and try and play the sort of ultra-aggressive basketball cricket that they really want to play, but just get themselves into a position to do so.
It's such an interesting time now. Obviously, basketball's only had 18 months. Do you think down under, when we go down under, Monty, have England got a chance for the first time in a long time? Do you think basketball could work in Australian conditions?
Well, there is a long time to go there, and they've got to produce some fast bowlers. That's the key. They can't just use Josh Tung and, you know, James Anderson. I'll be surprised. It'd be remarkable if he is there. If he's still there, he'll probably beat Murray Lithurn's record by then. And then, you know, Wokesy isn't as effective on these hard pitches. You need the fast bowlers who can bowl quick, hit the deck really hard. And that's going to be the challenge for them for the next 2 years, is to develop a good set of fast bowlers for the Ashes. But if they bowl with this sort of attack, they weren't able to win in Australia, because it's just the ball doesn't swing as much, and it's the fast bowlers that hit the deck, get more out of the pitch. So, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. You know, they've got to find a couple of more fast bowlers. I don't see Jofra Archer being available. Ollie Stone is injury prone. There's Josh Tung, which is a great emergence, but Ollie Robinson, you know, Chris Wokes, you know, James Anderson, I don't know if he would be still there. You know, they need a couple of more fast bowlers. And if they can find them, yeah, then I think they've got a good chance.
Very interesting. I hope we can finally win down under. Obviously, Toby, the Australians have not won in England since 2001. For the first time since 1950, blowing a 2-game lead in a series. What happened to Australia, do you think?
Well, I think they were pretty outplayed, I think, is sort of the first thing you have to mention. They very easily could have lost that Edgbaston test match if England, as Monty said, were a bit more ruthless. Lords, yet again, a lack of ruthlessness in that third innings in particular, I think, where they sort of didn't really... they sort of threw away a bit of a lead at some point and then sort of didn't really push on when they really should have done. And then Edgbaston, they were... Headingley, they were fairly outplayed again as well. Took a few wickets and it was a bit nervy towards the end. Old Trafford absolutely wiped the floor with. And then the Oval, yet again, the Aussies kind of, they were the ones who lacked that ruthlessness. And I think realistically that if they'd won this series, they would have gone down to one of the sort of greater Australian sides, and they haven't. And arguably correctly, they've sort of come over, well, even particularly the last two series, been in great positions and thrown them away. They could have easily won the last series, 2019, 4-0, comfortably. Headingley was obviously big, and the Old Trafford, the Oval as well, where they sort of started celebrating and didn't really feel like they were going to play properly, and it sort of bit them in the arse, and they didn't manage to get a win then, and didn't manage it this time either. I think Ben Stokes in particular played phenomenally in a couple of innings, and helped carrying them over the side. And then Chris Wokes and Mark Wood coming in for the final three tests were fantastic as well.
Monty, Australia won three tests in a row at the start of this English summer and then failed to win one crucial game more. Do you think it was the length of the tour? Do you think England had grown into the series? What prevented Australia from regaining or retaining the Ashes?
I probably think that, you know, the weather's kind of saved them at Old Trafford. And I think they would have been completely gone if they lost that game. I just believe that Australia probably played the slightly unorthodox way of how Australia don't normally play. You know, they're very bullish. They're very, very much into your face. They kind of set the tone. They dominate the games. And then the other teams tend to react. But this was the other way around. And I don't think it suits Australia, but they didn't have a choice because they weren't too sure. Because when they bowl, their own bowlers, their three bowlers are going over six and over, that is a concern. You know, they've got to think, well, clearly they didn't have any answers. And that's why they had men in the deep. And also Nathan Lyon was a big loss as well. You know, I think if he was continually playing, and like we said, Old Trafford, if he played with a turning pitch, where they didn't play, you know, Murphy, it could have been a different result altogether. So yeah, if Nathan Lyon was playing, then yeah, I just think they probably would have won it. It wouldn't expose so many cracks. But let's be honest, you know, this Aussie team kind of got away with it, really. You know, they knew they haven't played the best cricket, but they played the sort of, they managed the risk. That's what they kept themselves in the game. They weren't never too far away and out of it. And I think it's England to blame because whenever they have the foot on the throat, you got to keep them there. You know, I remember the days when Steve Waugh, Ricky Ponting, gosh, when they were dominant, they were absolutely dominant. And that's a bit, you know, if England are in a position like that again in Australia, which is a long time to go, they need to change that. They need to address that, not let Australia back in the game just to play entertaining cricket.
It is such a balance of finding that entertaining cricket where we get new fans and sort of borderline fans back in the game. But we also need to win the games. It sounds very simple, but winning the Ashes is something we haven't done since 2015. Test cricket is our prime objective, but not being able to win the Ashes since 2015 for me is just very disappointing. Jack, obviously it's a bit of a damp squib for England not being able to win the series 2-2. Are you going to still watch cricket and test cricket? Has it sort of gotten you back into the spirit of the game?
Yeah, definitely. I think the dramatic moments that we've seen, obviously, you know, with the Carey and Bairstow controversy, different ways of looking at it, especially once the dust had settled, maybe more England fans saying, should Johnny have gone for a walk, but is it in the spirit of the game? I think even moments like that, which are irritating from an England point of view, have helped draw me back in because I think a lot of the arguments that people that not necessarily have, you know, don't like cricket for a specific reason, just have sort of a blanket excuse of, oh, it takes too long or it's boring or whatever, or, you know, I'll watch a T20 but nothing else because it takes too long. I think their argument always is it's not enthralling enough. It doesn't have the moments like that. But I think Stokes bringing Chris Wokes in, and then, you know, we've seen a good variety of players putting together really good stints with the bat as well. And then obviously, as sad as I am that Brodie's retiring, his announcement of his retirement is just another factor that is sort of drawing fans in, because I don't know the viewing figures, but I imagine once that was announced across social media and everything, you know, with BBC and Sky doing loads about it, I imagine that will have drawn in other people as well that, you know, haven't watched cricket for a few years, because that would have been enough. I know for me, even if I'd not been watching the rest of the series, hearing that someone like Stuart Broad is retiring, and obviously Moeen Ali as well, would have been enough for me to come back and say, oh, well, I've got to watch their last stint. So I'm definitely going to continue watching cricket in all formats, I think. Hopefully start playing cricket again if I can find myself a club. And, you know, I'm not too shambolic having let my skills sort of, what's the word, depreciate over the last 3 or 4 years. I had to go with a tennis ball at my little cousin the other week, and there was I don't even think you could call them wides. They were that far wide. So, but it's really reignited my passion for cricket again. And maybe that's sort of the best thing that it could have done with a stalemate result, which is literally the fault of the weather. It's, you know, it's so disappointing because it is, like Monty said, it's a missed opportunity for England. We could have stamped our territory there, and obviously it's always harder going down under, so it would have been nice to hold on to that, providing, you know, if we're to assume that it's going to take some, it might take something fairly special for us to go and win down under. But I think that's the best thing that we can take away from it, is this sort of rekindling of the fire across the nation for cricket, I think.
Toby, that was essentially our mission statement when we first started Sticky Wickets back in first year in the midst of COVID, where we'd only met once and you had a shaved head and it was all very exciting. And getting people back into cricket, like Jack is a prime example. People are getting back into watching cricket now. We both have very different ways of thinking about it. You're a very big advocate of the 100. I maybe not. But this summer of Test cricket has been superb. Jack, again, raises a very good point. Moeen Ali, one of his best performances in an England shirt. It was just superb to watch him go out so well as well. And I've obviously been a big critic of his batting in the past. And his spin bowling, I don't think, has been fantastic since 2017. But I cannot fault Moeen's work ethic and mentality and determination this Ashes series. That final spell was superb and essentially unlocked the door for Stuart Broad to take those final wickets. He has confirmed this is his last test for England. We've heard him say that before, but hopefully he might be a bit more to his word this time. Toby, Moeen Ali, what does he mean to you? What's he mean to English cricket?
Yeah, I think he's been a great servant of English cricket for, what, about a decade now. I think it was 2013, 2014, I think he made debut. Maybe a bit later, actually. But he's been phenomenal. In and out of the side a lot, I guess, is sort of one of the big thoughts around Moeen Ali, is whether he should have been playing. Came in originally as a batter who bowled a bit of off-spin, finished off as an off-spin who batted a little bit. And then when he came out of retirement again this summer, he sort of bit of both, batted at three, bowled a lot of key overs, got a lot of key wickets, could have had a few more as well this test match and this series as well. But I mean, what a brilliant player he is. Always had a lot of unbelievable cover drive, I think, is one of the things you won't ever forget about Moeen Ali. And I think Dom even has to agree with that one.
I will 100% hold my hands up. He was superb yesterday. Monty, we talk about Moeen Ali taking wickets at crucial times. Why does he take wickets at crucial times? Why has he been so good for England as a former spinner yourself?
Yeah, well, I think what helps him is playing in the T20 games, because he's got four overs to take a wicket, and he sensed an opportunity when the batsman looked to go after him. And he's one of them bowlers which he doesn't sort of darts it, puts it, or bowls it into the pitch. He does give it air and he entices the batsman. He doesn't mind getting hit for a couple of sixes because he knows he can bat a bit as well. So later on, when he comes to bat, you hit a few runs and then that kind of makes up for it. So I think because of his batting skill, it allows him to keep giving the ball air and kind of thinks like batsmen, what the batsmen are looking to do. So yeah, he's not going to be as accurate or bowl loads of maidens, but he'll be looking to get wickets. And he wouldn't mind to get hit for a few runs. And he's always taking, you know, some of the key wickets in the top six batters. If you can able to do that, then that will help. That's helping the team. And you know, there's not so much pressure after that for him once he's got a couple of wickets. And all he needs to do is get a couple of to turn in 15 over spell. He doesn't have the pressure of a specialist spinner who has to hold and end up bold quality deliveries and overs, to stay in the game. He knows that, oh, if it doesn't go well today, it's okay. I'll have a bat. I'll knock it around a bit. So his team, you know, that really helps him then to be an attacking spinner.
Mm. And I think perfect for Bazball. He was almost born 5 years a bit too late, or too early, sorry. But also, for a point of Moeen, he was also a fantastic piece of diversity within the England team. Now, Monty, you're a massive advocate of diversity in the English game, and I remember you talking about what it meant to you to be the first Sikh to play for England in the Fantastic Edge documentary. What is the next step for Moeen Ali, do you think?
Well, he's going to probably play, you know, T20 cricket, you know, games. I think he'll enjoy the franchise, you know, world as much as possible. You know, I suspect he may even just sign a sort of a multi-year deal with the IPL to play, you know, the franchise leagues around the world. I think he'll try and maximise that as much as he can, because he can do with a bat and the ball that he's so skillfully, and he's a good captain as well. So, yeah, so he may do that for a few years. And why not? You know, should maximise his, earning potential.
Definitely. Monty, who was your player of the series? Who would you have to have won the Compton Miller medal?
I probably would have gone for... I was hoping it would have been Mark Wood, but he didn't bowl, you know, couldn't sustain it. I think Chris Woke is the right option. You know, he got the winning runs. He's bowled magnificently well. In the three games, he's taken, you know, 19 wickets, and he completely changed the way, you know, England bowling attack. James Anderson wasn't getting the same level of swing as he was. So, yeah, they've got the right person, Chris Wokes.
Jack, who would you have as your Compton Miller medal and your player of the series?
I think Wokes has impressed me the most. I think he was sort of making his debuts around the time where I sort of lost touch with the game a little bit. I can remember his name floating about, but I can't remember a lot of him. But I'm quite a sentimental guy. And so for his retirement, obviously still having a big impact, you know, picked up a few runs as well. I mean, not consistently throughout the series, but when we needed him to, and obviously has picked up wickets as well. And the man who sort of set the first match I ever saw on fire and took the game to whoever the opponent was at that test at Trent Bridge that I can't remember. I think for me, it's for his services and obviously his chat to the Aussies as well with the Bales and taking the mick out of Carey a bit with the after the Bairstow incident. I think for me, it's Stuart Broad.
Stuart Broad, Toby, player of the series for you.
Well, before it was sort of announced, I kind of assumed it was going to be Zach Crawley that they got player of the series. And he was absolutely phenomenal. I not hate to admit it, but yes, reluctantly did. Having so not been his number one fan over the last couple of years. But I thought he's been brilliant all summer. I would say I would agree with Monty though. I think Chris Wokes, just the difference he made in the three matches he played, England's sort of best three games and the three they won or maybe should have won at Old Trafford. And I think he just made that difference that people didn't realise. No one was talking about him at the beginning of the summer. Even when he was left out of the Ireland test match, everyone thought, he's good, but he's not that good. And then actually when he came in, had a chance to really prove himself. And he has an unbelievable record in England. And I think everyone's kind of forgotten that. And it'll be very hard to forget that now over the next couple of years while he's still be playing for England. Whether he keeps his place over the winter would be a different question. However, I think, yeah, Chris Wokes has been unbelievable. And with the bat as well in that crucial chase, Headingley, everyone kind of forgets that he was there at the end along with Mark Wood to hit those winning runs.
For me, the player of the series has to be Ben Folkes. He's been fantastic on Twitter. So many wickets that he would have taken. Everything would have been solved if Ben Folkes was there. I will go for Zach Crawley. I think his reaction to the media has been superb. Just scoring lots of runs. And I think we might have found if he can just get some more time in the nets and in the middle of a test cricket arena, we've got a very good England player there. I think it is worth mentioning that whilst we have been very critical of the English team, it's been superb for the game, but also that there are bigger things in life. 80 years ago, yesterday, was Hedley Verity passed away. Now, Hedley Verity played for England in Yorkshire, dismissed Donald Bradman the most, got him out 14 times, so a very good bowler, and he was killed in the Sicily campaign in the Second World War. And I think it puts into perspective that whilst there's been a lot of needle in this series, there's been a lot of on-field aggro. We're so lucky to live in the time we are where there's so much peace in the world. And I just wanted to mention that because I think it's a lovely sort of mention that cricket goes on forever and the Ashes is a lovely friendship and a lovely rivalry. I think that's where we're going to end. Monty, you predicted it as 2-2 at the start of the series. Fantastic prediction there. And also the fantastic prediction of getting Stuart Broad's retirement. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on every post-match game call. You've been an absolute hero to me growing up. And so we're all so grateful, myself and Toby and the whole of URN, for your time and your services to our podcast. Thank you so much, Monty. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I really enjoyed the Ashes version of it. And hopefully we may be able to do something in the future, possibly a World Cup one.
Oh, now you're talking. Jack, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And also massive congratulations to you. You just finished being head of URN. Hope you will watch cricket in the future. And thank you very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on. I mean, I can't believe it's taken me like 3 years, but there we go. First and last appearance. Like it. But it's been brilliant watching Sticky go from strength to strength over the 3 years that I've been here, especially the past two as I've been, you know, management and then working with you, Dom, on committee, and then both of you this year on committee has been absolutely brilliant. And sort of seeing you two rewarded with the opportunity to do something like this that you've done with Monty has been wonderful for everyone at URN to see. So congratulations, boys. It's been a fantastic spell.
Thank you. Toby, it's the end of the Ashes summer, but it's not the end of the cricketing summer. You have 20 seconds to extol the virtues of the 100. Bliss-free. Go on.
Absolutely not. The 100 is underway currently at the moment. Trent Rockett's my team. The girls are currently playing the Southern Brave in what should be quite a good game. I think obviously we'll know the result by the time this podcast has come out. But I think 100, obviously a very different style of cricket to the Test matches. Maybe less different to Basball. So if you've enjoyed seeing a lot of sixes and a lot of aggression with the bat and the ball, then the 100's exactly where you should be going. Yeah. And I will add there, we hopefully a less aggressive crowd at the 100, I'd say, as well, than Lords and a few other places.
Very good point, Toby. And I think it's a lovely way to end our Ashes coverage. Monty, once again, thank you. Jack, thank you. Toby, there's only one way to end this podcast. I'll say go well, and you will say...
Thank you for having us on this podcast.